the Christian state of life, or sermons on the principal duties of Christians in general, and of different states in particular, by Father Francis Hugh Nault, translated from the original German edition of Cologne, 1740, by Father J. Allen, copyright 1886. On the contentment of each one in his state of life as far as the service of God is concerned, preached on the Feast of the Purification of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and after the days of her purification, according to the law of Moses, were accomplished, they carried him to Jerusalem, St. Luke chapter 2, verse 22. The Blessed Virgin Mary offered two sacrifices today in the Temple of Jerusalem. As a mother, she offered her Son to his eternal Father, and as a virgin, she sanctified her virginity in the judgment of the world. And both these sacrifices were very difficult ones. She could offer nothing to heaven that was greater and more excellent than her divine Son, and humanly speaking, she could offer nothing she loved more to preserve before the world than her virginity, for as the Holy Fathers teach, she would have preferred not to be the Mother of God if she could not have kept her virginal purity. Yet, in obedience to the law of Moses, she had to appear as an ordinary woman who was in need of purification. But, O Immaculate Virgin, thou dost not stand in need of that ceremony. Let them observe it who were subject to the law. It was not made for thee. Certainly, it seemed as if the Holy Virgin answered, It is for me, because such is the will of God. My Son was subjected himself, like a sinner, to the law of circumcision, and I will submit to the law of purification. Such is the will of God, and that is enough for me. Ah, Mary, obtain from thy Son for me, through the hands of thy angels, the grace that I may today impress deeply on my own heart and on the hearts of all here present, those few words, Such is the will of God. Then there will be an end to so many fruitless sighs and complaints, for there are only a few who are content in their state of life, while the greater number are always wishing to be better off than they are, and the error of those people comes from the fact that they do not think nor acknowledge that it is the will of God for us to be as we are. My dear brethren, I have always shown that each one can and must be contented and satisfied with his state of life, no matter what it is, because the God of infinite wisdom and goodness has appointed it for him. There are still two other complaints to be examined, one of which is founded on fancied piety, for there are many who say that they cannot serve God as they wish in their state of life, and therefore they are always longing for another state in which they can pay more attention to their salvation. This I will now refute, relying principally on the argument, Such is the will of God. And I say, you would not serve God better if you were in another state of life than you now are in that which He has appointed for you, the first part. You would not serve God at all if you were in another state which He has not appointed for you, the second part. Therefore, if you wish to serve God, perform well the duty required by your state, and be satisfied with the divine decree, the conclusion. I must here briefly remind you of what I have said in the two last sermons on this subject, for the whole matter rests on that, and if it is properly understood and deeply impressed on the mind, it is sufficient to make any sensible man, no matter who he is, powerful and contented. In the first place, God does not wish from one what he requires from another, nor does he wish all to serve him in the same way. For he is a great king, who desires to have many servants and ministers in different capacities in his court. Hence, everyone cannot have the same state, occupation, and mode of life, nor can one perform even as many works of piety and devotion as another, but each one must attend to the divine service as well as he can in the state of life assigned to him. Secondly, the great difference we see amongst men, one being poor, another rich, one being high, another of lowly birth, one having an easy, another a hard life, is necessary for the general good and for the preservation of the world, which could not long subsist if we were all equal. Thirdly, as it is God who rules everything in the world by his providence, and with the sole exception of sin, does not allow the least thing to happen without his will and decree, so also it is he who makes that difference between men, distributes his gifts according to his own pleasure, and appoints to each one the state of life in which he now is and will be in future. From this it follows that the distribution of states of life is just and reasonable, because the God of infinite wisdom, justice, and holiness cannot fail nor err in his decrees, and therefore no one has a right to make the least complaint of his state or circumstances, no matter what they are. Fourthly, God has appointed the states and circumstances of life for the greater good of each individual, and because he has foreseen that such a state or such circumstances would best enable each one to gain heaven in the way in which divine providence has resolved to lead him thither. Hence, each one must not be only satisfied with his state of life, but must also rejoice and thank God for having appointed that state for him with all its circumstances, nor has he anything to dread or to guard against but the unhappy state of sin. Keeping these points well before our minds, we shall now proceed to examine the ordinary complaints, wishes, and desires of many men who lead discontented and unhappy lives, and who blame the Almighty God, because, as they imagine, they cannot serve him properly in their present state. We shall see whether they have real cause for complaint or not. If I were not so poor, they say, if I were a little better off, so that I need not work so hard the whole day, if I were not so delicate and sickly, so that I must spend the most of my time in the house or in bed, I wish you had become a priest, or at all events, that I could live alone and avoid all those domestic cares that sometimes almost drive me fanatic. If I were not troubled with so many children, if I had not that husband, that wife, who is the cause of all my troubles, discontent, and impatience, who will drive me mad in the end. If I had another master or mistress, who would give me more free time, if I could only manage to live without having to attend to others. And many more complaints of the same kind, my dear brethren, that you can easily imagine for yourselves, for you know best what you have often desired and longed for. But now I ask all those people, if you were what and where you wish to be, what then? Oh, then I could serve God better. I could do more good, spend more time in prayer, go to church oftener, be more generous in the practice of Christian charity and mercy, and attend principally to the business of my soul. Whereas now, in my present state, occupation, or business, and with all the cares and anxieties that oppress me, I have hardly time for a serious thought once or twice in the day. Yes, so you think, at all events. But now, with regard to the first point, tell me, How do you know that you would serve God as he wishes you to serve him if you were in the state you longed for? His providence has placed you in your present state, in the midst of your present cares and anxieties, and not in another state in which you imagine you would be better off. It is not enough to do a good and holy work. The first question is whether God wishes that work to be done at that time and in that way, by that particular person. But I will speak of that in the second part. Suppose even that every good work in every state performed by anyone were pleasing to God, provided it is done with the proper intention for his sake. How do you know that if you were in the state you longed for, you would perform those works of devotion, serve God better, do more good, or attend more to your soul, as you imagine? Have you penetrated the secrets of the divine council chamber, and there discovered that wonderful knowledge by which God foresees for eternity what can happen to each individual under any possible circumstances, and by which he decrees that it is to be done or admitted at certain times? Certainly, neither your knowledge nor mine can reach so far. You know the state you are in now, and how things go with you from day to day, but you cannot say for certain how it will be with you tomorrow in that state, even for a single hour. You sigh now. Later on, perhaps, you will laugh. Now you are full of consolation. By and by, you will lose all courage. Today you are very devout. Tomorrow you will be quite cold in the service of God. Today you would rather die 1,000 times than offend God by mortal sin. Tomorrow you may forget all about it for the sake of some small profit, or on account of an unchaste look or desire, or the love of a creature, and you may give up God, your soul, and heaven, consent to sin, and sell yourself to the devil. So changeable are we poor mortals in our resolutions. What we eagerly desire 1 hour, we reject with loathing the next. And how can you say with certainty that you would live well in a state in which you have had as yet no experience? How can you know the difficulties that would await you, the desires and inclinations that would arise in your mind, the temptations with which the devil, the treacherous world, and your own rebellious flesh would attack you? You would, in all probability, be more dissatisfied and more troubled than you now are in your present state. How, then, can you say that if you were in another circumstances, as you fondly imagine, you could do more good, serve God better, attend more to your soul, and be more certain of heaven? With reason, the wise man says, the thoughts of mortal men are fearful, and our counsels uncertain. Why are they fearful? Because we are blind as to the future, and know nothing of it. We are like a little child who is left in the dark in a strange room, and is frightened at everything, because he knows not where he is, nor where he is going. If he could come across a chair, the best thing for him to do would be to sit down on it, and keep quiet till a light is brought, or the day breaks. We are blind, my dear brethren, and wander about in the dark whenever we direct our thoughts to the future. We are not able to understand clearly even what is present, much less to know what we would do if we were situated differently. Therefore, if we are wise, we shall dread taking a step in the dark, and longing for another state or condition. The best thing we can do is to sit down quietly on the chair that is already placed for us, that is, to say, to content ourselves with the state which God, the ruler of the world, has allotted us, and to try to serve Him and save our souls therein as well as we can. I do not think that we should work miracles if we were in any other state. Again, do you imagine you could serve God better if you were differently situated? How could you do that? Is it not by the grace and help of God? For certainly, you will not think you can do more than the great apostle of the Gentile, St. Paul, who had to say of himself, "Not I, but the grace of God with me." I do a great deal of good in converting heathens, in procuring the glory of God, in watching, in prayer, in suffering, hunger and thirst, heat and cold, dangers by land and water, persecutions and trials by day and night, for the name of Jesus Christ. Yet, not I, but the grace of God with me. It is, in fact, an article of faith that no one can perform a single supernatural work meritorious of heaven without the preventing and cooperating grace of God. Now God bestows His grace according to the state and the occupation of which He has called each individual, and it is in the same way that He gives special graces and helps, which are called the grace of vocation. These helps He does not give to others who are differently situated. For instance, to get up during the night, to spend whole hours in choir singing and meditating, to live in strict silence and solitude, to fast often and rigorously, to wear coarse clothing and chastise the body frequently during the week with iron griddles and disciplines. All these things seem terrible and insupportable to a man of the world, and many are horrified when they merely read or hear of such austerities. Yet, a good religious who tries to serve God according to his state will not think much of these things, although he may naturally be as sensitive as anyone else. Why is that? It is the effect of the grace of vocation, which is given to the religious and not to the man of the world, who is not called to that state by God. On the other hand, many could not endure to have the cries of little children resounding in their ears all day long, to have to wash and dress and carry them about. For my part, I could not stand it a single day. Yet fathers and mothers have, as a general rule, no difficulty in doing all that. They are quite patient and have even joy and consolation in it. How is that? It is the effect of the grace of vocation. Now I ask you again, how could you serve God in a different state of life, perform your duties, and bear incidental trials and difficulties better and with greater merit than you can in the state in which you now are, if God did not give you those special graces? Do you imagine that He would be more generous to you with His helps if you placed yourself in circumstances in which He does not wish you to be than He now is when you are in the state of His providence has allotted you? I do not think so. If you are now so slothful and careless, in spite of the many graces of state you receive, in all probability, you would be much worse if you were situated otherwise, and therefore, instead of serving God better, you would neglect Him more than you now do. Remain, therefore, as you are, and where you are, according to the will of God. Be content with your state, and give up those useless complaints and anxious desires by which you merely torment yourself and cannot do the least good. If you really mean what you say and are sincerely desirous of serving God better and doing more good, then begin in your appointed state and show that you are in earnest. Perform your daily tasks and duties with a good intention, which you must renew often during the day, for God's sake. Bear incidental difficulties and trials with patience. Do all you can to avoid mortal sin at all events, and if your state exposes you to dangers of sin that you cannot avoid, call upon the Almighty with humility and constancy to help you, and do not go into such occasions without necessity. If you do that, you will serve God in the best possible way, and it is, in fact, the only way to serve Him properly. For you cannot serve God by wishing to do what is not suited to the state appointed for you by Him, as we shall see in the second part. To serve God, do good, live piously, save one soul, and go to heaven. In what does that consist? How is it to be done? Is it only by prayer, meditation, going to church, watching, fasting, giving alms, visiting the sick and those who are in prison, and chastising the body, as many simple-minded persons think, who imagine that the service of God and true piety consists only in such things? Oh, if that were the case, we should be badly off indeed. The most of us would have reason enough to be discontented and to complain. And what would sick and delicate people do? How could they come to church or pray? And how could they then serve God and save their souls? And the poor and needy, what hope would be for them, for they receive alms and cannot give any? You, too, who are engaged in the public service, and who must be always writing and studying. You merchants, you must be always in business. You workmen, you have to spend the day in your workshops. You laborers, who continually toil in the gardens and fields. Woe to you, indeed, if that were the case, for you would give only the least part of your time to God. And what would then become of your souls? Is it really thy wish, O Lord, that all men should go to heaven? Art thou sincere in commanding them to do good and to serve thee faithfully to the end of their lives? But if so, why hast thou made so many different states of life amongst men and placed so many people in such circumstances that it is almost impossible for them to serve thee always? Clearly then, my dear brethren, the service of God must necessarily consist in something else, that all men, under all circumstances, can fulfill and observe perfectly, and such is really the case. If you ask me then, in what, I will let you answer yourselves. There are two maidservants in your house. You say to one, "Stay in the room and mind the child," and to the other, "Go into the garden and dig." Both are ready to obey, and they do what you tell them. Now which of the two servants does your will? Both of them, you will answer. But why? Neither has been attending on you. One was sitting by the fire in an easy chair, amusing himself with the child. The other was digging in the garden and did not, perhaps, think of you the whole time. Is that serving you? Yes, certainly, you answer, because they both did what I told them. And you are quite right. But suppose that one of them got tired of digging, came into the room and said, "I am so fond of my mistress that I cannot bear to be away from her. I will remain with her and attend to her, and we can hold a friendly conversation with each other." What would you think of that? Would that servant obey you better thus than if she had remained in the garden? "What are you talking about?" you would say to her. "I did not hire you to love your mistress so much. I do not want your conversation nor your attendance. If I required you, I should have called you. Go back and do as you are told, if you really wish to be obedient and to respect me." "But," the servant would say, "the other maid can sit by the fire. I am able to do that as well as she. Let me change with her, and she can see what it is to dig in the garden." You would not argue long with a servant like that. "Go," you would say, "and do what I told you. The other must remain as she is, because such is my will. If you do not obey me, you are no servant of mine." "Quite right again. But you have now answered the first question." Serving God and doing good consists in nothing else than in doing, omitting, and suffering whatever, however, and whenever God wills each one to do, to omit, and to suffer. The Lord God has many servants and handmaids to whom He has given different states in life. He is not in need of any of them, and He places His exterior glory in having His creatures do as He wishes them. Whatever He requires from them, be it great or small, prayer or labor, little or much, it is well done if done according to His will. This is the only source of all our virtue and piety and holiness of life, and we must always act like the servant of whom the centurion says in the gospel, "I say to one, go, and he goeth, and to another, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it." He who neglects this, dear, does not serve God at all. Why? Because he refuses to do what God has commanded him, as I shall prove more in detail hereafter, although it is so evident that any sensible man might see it for himself. And still you come with your discontent and your anxious desires. "I wish I was a priest. I wish I was unmarried. I wish I was richer. I wish this. I wish I was that. I could then serve God better and have more opportunity and time to do good and to save my soul." How can that be? Are the years longer for priests and others than for you in your state of life? Have they more than 24 hours in their days and nights? No, you say, but they have more hours to devote to prayer and divine service than I, who have so many cares, so much work to occupy me, so that I have hardly an hour in the day to give to God. So that you imagine, after all, that the only time given to God is what you spend in prayer and works of devotion, and you act like the servant who refused to work in the garden and wished to be near her mistress. You, too, wish to be always near your Lord in prayer. I admit that the ecclesiastical state is much holier and more perfect in itself than the secular state, but it is so only for those who are called to it. Certainly, O good God, I and many others have great reason to thank Thee most humbly every day for the vocation Thou hast given us. And woe to me if I do not work with that great grace and live according to my holy state. But if thou hast not wished me to serve thee in this state, if thou hast decreed me to be a shoemaker, a charcoal burner, or a chimney sweep, or that I should earn my living by digging or other work, would I not have served thee just as well, O my God, if I had been content with thy decree and had done thy will to the best of my power? There is not the least doubt of it, and I should not serve thee if I had not done thy will in the way appointed by thee. Such is the case, my dear brethren. A religious consecrated to God sits or kneels for many hours, day and night, in choir, singing the praises of God. His day is all marked out for him. Part of it he must spend in meditation, part in vocal prayer, or in spiritual reading, or in other good works, according to the rule. He does a good work whenever he does any of those things zealously and with a proper intention. He serves God, but why? Why is his work good? Because he does what God wishes him to do. The father of a family looks after his domestic concerns. The mother minds her children. The lawyer studies and manages the cases entrusted to him. The tradesman works with his hammer, thread, needle, etc. The servant waits upon his master. The maid sweeps the house. The poor man begs his bread from door to door. The sick man sits in an easy chair and eats dainty food. Are not all these doing good, too, and serving God? Who can doubt it, provided only that they have a good conscience and a proper intention? Why? Because they perform what is expected of them. They do what God wishes them to do. But, you say, their occupations are not spiritual, like those of religious. No matter, as long as they fulfill the will of God, they do enough. Or do you think that you are bound to do all the good things you see others doing? Very well, if so, come along, fathers and mothers. Let your houses look after itself. It will not run away from you. Come into the choir and sing the office with the religious. Let your children cry as much as they please. The praise of God and the salvation of your soul have the first claims in your attention. You lawyers and counselors, when you go into court or to the council chamber, take Thomas a Kempis under your arm and let your legal documents lie where they are. You can consult them if a question arises. Read your Imitation of Christ, and if anyone says anything to you, tell him you must do good and save your souls. You shopkeepers, kneel down behind the counter and say the office of the Immaculate Conception, and if a customer comes in, tell him that he must wait till you have finished your prayers, because you must serve God. In the same way, you workmen and servants, carry your rosaries in your hands, and if your masters tell you to work, you must answer them. Prayer is more important. I must first say the rosary a dozen times and work for my soul. That would suit you admirably, would it not? It is far easier than working. But you think it would be too ridiculous. And I am of the same opinion. It would be just as if one expected the blacksmith to work with a needle or the tailor with a hammer. Not less ridiculous is the complaint of some. I cannot do what others do. I have not the time, etc. No, you cannot. And what is more, you must not do it. What have you to do with the works of others? You are not expected to perform them. We are strange creatures indeed. We desire to do what we should not, and have a great reluctance to perform what our duty requires of us. If God had wished you to serve him in a different manner, he would have appointed a different state for you. Do now what your state requires of you. Pray when the time comes for prayer. Work when it is time to work. Go to church if your duties do not prevent you. Give alms and do works of mercy if you have the means and opportunities. Let each one do what his state requires of him. Let him do it well, as God expects him to do it, and let him do it with a good intention, because God requires it of him. That is quite enough. In that way, everyone can do good and serve God as he wishes to be served. In that way, all will work out their salvation according to the divine will. Ah, thinks another, I must occupy myself the whole day with vile and despicable things. to support myself and my family. How can I please God thereby? The surest sign of the divine will is the fact that you are forced to engage in such occupations, for he could easily free you from them if he wished, and that he has commanded you to support yourself and your family thereby. Therefore, if you do willingly and patiently what you are forced to do, and offer it up with a good conscience and a pure intention to God, because it is his will, who can deny that God is pleased with your work? Here is St. Dothorius writes of his disciple Dositheus. The latter, since through bodily weakness he could not observe the order of the day like the others in the monastery, for he could not rise in the morning, nor work, nor eat, nor drink like the others, in order to do something for God's sake, gave himself up completely in obedience to one of his superiors, who ordered him to attend to the sick now and then, when he was able to do so. Dositheus obeyed humbly and readily for 5 years, when he died of consumption. God revealed to the abbot of the monastery that the young Dositheus was as in high in glory as St. Paul and St. Anthony. The other monks began to complain when they heard this. They said, "Where is then thy justice, O Lord? Thou hast made like to us, nay, even superior to us, a man who was brought up in comfort and never fasted, nor chastised his body, nor interrupted his night's rest, while we have to bear the whole burden of religious observance by day and night. What greater reward can we hope for in all our labor and trouble than Dositheus, who has done hardly anything in comparison to us, has already gained in heaven? For thou hast made him equal in glory to the greatest saints." And God answered them, saying, "His obedience merited more in a short time than all the austerities of many others. Dositheus did what he had to do and what his superior commanded him. I have not required him to fast, watch, nor chastise his body, because his health did not permit. He performed a service most pleasing to me, because he did well and zealously what I wished him to do." Let us all take this to ourselves. Do well what your state requires. God will certainly not expect any more from you. Nay, besides the keeping of his commandments, he cannot expect any more. He must be satisfied with that. For what father who has taught his son nothing but a trade could reasonably expect that son to write a learned essay for him? And if the father were angry with him for not being able to do it, the son could say, "But, father, if you wished me to write such things, you should have sent me to school to study. My trade does not teach me to write fine essays, but as far as my trade is concerned, I am at your service." Certainly, if on the last day God were to require from a man more than belonged to his state and circumstances, that man could answer that he had done well the work which he had been appointed for him on earth. For instance, if God were to ask a poor man why he did not give more alms, the man might answer, "Lord, thou hast given me poverty as my portion. I have had to live on alms, or by my labor, but I have been content with thy will. Why have you lost Mass and missed the sermon so often on Sundays and holy days?" he will ask another. "Lord, thou hast given me sickness as my portion. The doctor and my confessor, whom thou hast commanded me to obey, told me to remain at home. I have borne my pain and weakness with patience for thy sake. What more could I do? Why have you not meditated every day on heavenly things? He will ask a simple plowman. Lord, thou hast not taught me how to meditate. I have tried to learn all I could from sermons and catechism, and to live according to what I have heard. I have offered up all day my daily labors to thee, because thou hast told me to do so. Why have you not gone forth to labor for my honor and glory, and to gain souls for me? Lord, the father of a family will answer, thou hast given me no talent for that. Thou hast imposed a different duty on me. I have worked for thy honor and glory by being content with my state, according to thy decree, by doing my duty to please thee, and by being diligent in exhorting my children and servants to do thy will. Why have you not heard Mass oftener and performed more works of piety? Lord, the servant will answer, thou hast set men over our heads. I could not do as I wished. My master and mistress told me to stay at home and work. Whenever I was allowed, I heard Mass every day, and I did everything with a good intention. Now, my dear brethren, what fault can God find with such answers? He will and must be satisfied with them. Nay, if all those works are performed in the state of grace, and those people die in that state, he must reward every one of them eternally, according to his promise in the Gospel of St. Matthew. Then will he render to every man according to his works. Mark those words, according to his works, not according to the works of another. Oh, if everyone only did well what his state requires, what a pleasing service would be rendered to God all over the world! Let us all begin, therefore, today, my dear brethren, to serve our God with fresh zeal, and let each one be satisfied with his state and with the divine decree. This should be our good intention every morning. My Lord and my God, behold me, thy servant, ready to do whatever is pleasing to thee. Thou hast placed me in this state. I thank thee most humbly for it. I am satisfied with it, no matter what it is. These labors, cares, occupations, annoyances, and trials will likely be my lot today. I will accept and endure them for thy greater honor and glory, because such is thy will. I rejoice with my whole heart that thou hast so many faithful servants in the world who will praise and honor thee on this day with holy occupations, which I have not time for, since my daily duties are far more lowly. Nevertheless, I know that thou wilt not despise what I do, but receive it from me with pleasure, for I can do nothing more pleasing to thee than that which thou wishest me to do. And that my daily work may please thee all the more, I unite it with the works of Jesus Christ thy Son, who spent the greater part of his life as a poor carpenter in the workshop, and did as much for thy glory in that state as he afterwards did by his preaching and miracles. Instead of saying long prayers, I will often raise my heart to thee during my daily labor and say, I do this for thy sake, O Lord, because it is pleasing to thee. For thy honor and glory, give me grace to perform all the duties of my state with zeal and diligence according to thy holy will, and keep me from all sin. Such should be your resolutions, my dear brethren, and you should do your best to keep it. That is the way to serve God, to do good, to be pious, and to gain heaven. Amen.